My name is Bilan Talerza, and I direct the Turkey Project here at CSIS and co-direct the Caspian Energy Project. Normally we do it with somebody from the Energy Department, but Bob's unwell, and Frank is not disposed today. So it's a solo effort, but hopefully it will enlighten those who are interested in Turkey as well as the energy sector. Now, 12 years ago, when we set up the Caspian Energy Project and the Turkey Project, we focused on two related questions: how the energy resources of the newly independent states of the former Soviet states around the Caspian were going to be brought to market, and how Turkey was going to play a role, if any, in this issue. The thinking at the time was the best solution was a route that would serve to export the energy resources that would not be dependent on the Russian pipeline system, while avoiding the Iranian alternative. This crystallized into the East-West Energy Corridor idea, in which Turkey would play the key role. 10 years on, with a lot of pushing from the U.S., the Turkish, the Azeri, Georgian governments, we have the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline that is almost operational. And our speaker today was very much instrumental in helping to do the initial work on the Turkish side on this issue. The last time he was here was actually in 2001. I looked it up. The title of his presentation was Review of Caspian Oil Export Routes, Russia, Turkey, and Iran. Now, clearly, he's going to focus mostly on how Turkey may or may not be playing a part in the East-West Energy Corridor. I think he's also going to be talking, but he's also going to be talking about the other actors involved in the process. He will also talk about gas, not just oil, and the extent to which Turkey has become dependent on north-south pipeline system that brings a lot of Russian gas to Turkey. And the question that will be asked, no doubt, after his presentation, unless he decides to tackle it through the presentation itself, is, you know, whether the East-West Energy Corridor idea, now that we have such a strong north-south relationship between Turkey and Russia. Necdet Pamir really does not need much of an introduction for the people around this table. Those are going to come in the next few minutes. But he's trained as a petroleum engineer from the Middle East Technical University. He worked with the Turkish National Oil Company, Turkish Petroleum, where he rose to be the Deputy General Manager. And he was involved, as I said, in the Turkish team that worked on the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline in its initial stages. He was chairman of the Chamber of Petroleum Engineers of Turkey between 1990 and 1995, and he's currently general coordinator of the Center for Eurasian Strategic Studies. I described him as the premier energy expert in Turkey, and frankly, though he does not meet this kind of praise from people who like and admire him, and his son doesn't like it, he really is the best expert on this issue, and I can't think of anybody to do justice to the important subject of a review of this issue than Necdet Pamir. Anyway, without further ado, the floor is his, as is the screen behind me.
Well, thank you, Bülent, and thank you for being so nice to be here. No, not yet. I mean, if we need, then we will look. Normally, I'm not going to make a PowerPoint presentation. I was also in another meeting, two groups, one from Turkey and one from the States. They wanted me to make a presentation on energy security in general and specifically on this recent Russia-Ukraine gas crisis, because a real disaster. We have a word in Turkish, disaster is much better than a much better than 1,000 advices. normally the crisis is named so they wanted me to elaborate on that issue. Anyway, I would normally prefer to respond to your questions, in fact. But to be on the safe side, what is this East-West corridor business? What is this energy security business? And how Turkey could play a role? Could we make it better? To make a better understanding, maybe I can use some slides not specifically designed for this purpose, today's presentation. But before using those slides, let me follow up with Bülent's introduction. Maybe more than 10 years ago, we were discussing the issue of, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, how we could solve the problem of this exclusivity. All the pipelines and export routes were so designed during the time of the Soviet Union that they had to cross the Russian territory. This is Volga-Don Channel, all the pipelines, and also the railways all had to cross the Russian territory. So together with the U.S., we tried to just champion the so-called East-West corridor. Within that concept, under that concept, we had the famous, at least famous for us, like a national issue, I mean the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan oil pipeline, which was aiming to transport the Azerbaijan's Azeri-Çıralı Güneşli fields oil through Georgia and through Turkey to Ceyhan and then to the Western markets. So this would be the first non-Russian and non-Iranian, of course, route. And also what was complementary under this strategy was the Shah Deniz gas to be transported in parallel to this BTC oil pipeline, again through Turkey, first to Turkey and then to Europe, which nowadays, for example, Europe is importing something around 190 billion cubic meters gas. In the reference scenario by the International Energy Agency, and according to their green paper roughly, in the year 2030, the import, not the consumption, the import volumes are expected to be as high as 630 billion cubic meters. And Europe is getting more and more dependent to Russia, nowadays approaching to 40%. So within that context and under that strategy, what we were trying to promote was, together with the U.S., pipelines not crossing the Russian territory and passing through Turkey and opening to the European and then to the Western markets. So this was what we were trying to do for the last 10-15 years. Now, on those days, unfortunately, I should say, named together with the then Undersecretary or Deputy Undersecretary Strobe Talbot, the Russia First approach was more or less the forming the general lines of the American policy towards that region, a nuclear power. They didn't want to just confront Russia. So such strategy did not help. On those years, although we were together promoting, at least giving lip service to this East-West corridor, unfortunately, this Russia First approach a bit delayed the process. And it was first with maybe Clinton administration then, after 1995, a bit more efforts were given to this understanding, the East-West corridor. But maybe it was after 9/11 event that rhetoric rather changed in a more, I should say, concentrated effort, because it also helped the diversification of the resources as far as the energy security concept was concerned, because they did not want to rely on unstable countries like Saudi Arabia. After this terminology then came into power, I should say. But anyway, they were talking on those days in the first years about these multiple pipelines, but unfortunately those multiple pipelines started to be constructed, but they were still crossing the Russian territory. This was an interesting conflict, I should say. Yes, multiple pipelines, but instead of bypassing Russia, the first pipeline was Caspian Pipeline Consortium, still crossing the Russian territory. The Kazakh oil was being pumped through the Russian territory to Novorossiysk. Who paid for it was, again, the American companies like Chevron and maybe a bit Exxon Mobil and some others. And the second pipeline, I should say, the early oil, Baku-Novorossiysk pipeline again crossed the Russian territory. And the Chechenistan bypass pipeline, which is Baku-Dagestan-Novorossiysk, this was a third line, a multiple pipeline, if you can define, but it was still crossing the Russian territory.
Sorry,
yeah.
Some people may not know. Do you have a map that would show any of these on there?
Maybe.
Something that would, because I'm familiar with it, but there may not be people who are
in that. No. I mean, okay, this is the northern early, it is called. This is, sorry. This is Baku. This one is the northern early, Baku-Novorossiysk. And this is CPC, Caspian Pipeline Consortium. Initially 26 million tons per annum. It's planned to be expanded to 72 million tons per year from 26, and this is the famous Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan. With delays, we hope the first oil to be loaded from Ceyhan on 27th of May. The delay is more than 1 year. It was planned to load from Ceyhan around March 2005. So this is Baku-Novorossiysk early oil. This is Caspian Pipeline Consortium. This map does not show, but it is instead of the Chechen pipeline, they made another Baku-Dagestan-Novorossiysk pipeline. Anyway, we were critical, of course, in certain conferences, a bit challenging the pipeline coordinators of the U.S. State Department, Steve Mann and many others. Yes, you are successful. We were telling that, yes, you are successful in multiple pipeline strategy, but they are still crossing Russia anyway. This is more or less the a bit history about these lines, and we were again trying to for the early oil concept, which was the initial volumes, which aimed to carry the initial volumes, so it could be a rather pilot test for the main export pipeline. We were championing or promoting the Baku-Supsa early oil pipeline, which was criticized in the Turkish also internal politics, but today we had seen that it is the only opening not crossing the Russian territory, and we see that it did not stop, as it was claimed, the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline. And it really helped a lot, Baku-Supsa. Unfortunately, our friends in BP were not, I mean, Terry Adams on those days, were not promoting the line. We were discussing it with Frank several minutes ago, and it was a very interesting story. If there are any questions, we would comment on that. Anyway, I would like to just, again, before going into more specifics, a bit about the Russian hegemony in the region. This is important because for Turkey, for pipelines crossing Turkey, would Turkey be a hub or not? Russia is holding the number one reserves of the world. It is something around, as far as BP Statistical World Review is concerned, something around 56 trillion cubic meters of gas, and they are the most important player. This is bringing economic benefits plus also a geopolitical advantage and upper hand to Russia. But it is not the sole issue. I mean, having those much reserves. When we are talking about the issue, I mean, we are talking, they are working, we should say. Russia successfully just made an agreement with Turkmenistan, not limited with their own reserves, Russia. They are playing this game, first of all, in upstream very well. For 80 billion cubic meters of Turkmen gas, they have already signed for until 2028. This is an International Energy Agency slide. So with almost roughly $50 price for 1,000 cubic meters of gas, they have the Turkmen gas in their pocket for 80 billion cubic meters. Just to give you a view about these numbers, Turkey consumed 27 billion cubic meters of gas last year. So 80 billion cubic meters, it's a significant volume. And just to give you an idea again, they are taking this Turkmen gas for $50 per 1,000 cubic meters, and it's a barter agreement. Half is paid cash, half is by some goods, selling their goods. But Turkey is paying, we are not allowed to say the exact number, so we will give a range anyway. They say that this is a secret. It is not less than $260, the Russian gas that we are purchasing. Just make a comparison. So they are having these benefits, taking Turkmen gas and keeping their own reserves and selling it with this price. And you may say, okay, there is a transportation factor cost. And what they are paying to Ukraine for 100 kilometers is $1.6 per 1,000 cubic meters, just to have an understanding. So anyway, they are not satisfied with Turkmen gas. This is Uzbek gas. They have already signed 10 billion cubic meters of agreement with them, but a memorandum of understanding was signed, and they are looking for 90 billion cubic meters for the coming years. This agreement was signed in 2002. Now people are, we were again discussing minutes ago, it's not only Russian gas that they are trying to send to Europe and Turkey. It is the CIS gas. They are trying to get out of that geography to have a better economy and to have their independence. This is the only way. They are only one, asset economy, either gas or oil. But unfortunately, they have to sell it for $50 price instead of $260. So this is another problem for the region. And also, they are capturing Kazakhstan's gas. They started with Karachakanak with 4 billion cubic meters, and now they are raising it to 10 billion cubic meters. They are processing it in Orenburg. So Russian hegemony, upper hand in upstream, is very effective. But if we think that it is only the upstream, that is the exploration and production side or supply side of the story, this would be a misleading or it won't be enough. We would be missing certain aspects, because Russia is playing another game. They are acting as a middleman between, for example, Europe and also Ukraine and Turkmenistan, for example. So Turkmenistan has to sell its gas directly to Russia, and Russia is then selling it to Europe or Ukraine. But when it comes to the Turkish case, as a case in point, we cannot resell Russian gas. The agreements are such. So this is another problem, that we are not playing it very well, but the Russians are doing it very well. And in the third part, one is supply monopoly, the second one is the middleman monopoly, and the third one is most dangerous one, maybe. There is an expression, as you know, in Turkish and in English, stick and carrot type of policy, and Russia is using this very effective. The recent price hikes from $50 to $250 roughly dollars to Ukraine, Belarus, or say not Belarus but Moldova, Armenia, Georgia, its ex-satellite countries, it is how they see it. They are showing the stick with those prices, then eating the carrot themselves again. I mean, this is a that type of stick and carrot policy. Maybe they are negotiating for the prices, but then they are taking control stakes from their gas distribution and electricity distribution systems. This is what they are doing in Moldova. For example, after these price hikes, they made a negotiation. Then we had seen that the gas distribution company of Moldova, they had given 64% to the Russians. More or less, it's the same in Georgia, it's the same in Armenia. So they have a great upper hand, and they are increasing their, strength in this region. And also, this have a geopolitical, impact, since maybe you may think that it is just an indirect issue, but when the United States needs Russia for Iran's getting nuclear problem, I mean, they need Russia and China deadly now, since they are increasing their upper hand position, Russia, so it's hard to negotiate without taking several items. They don't give you anything. So this is more or less Turkey's situation. Why am I addressing Turkey's situation? Because to be a hub, to be an effective player in this game, also you need to be a reliable market in between. Why? Because everybody is talking about, when you look at the map, Turkey is so well placed between big resources and big consumers, starting with Europe. Middle East, having oil reserves, having also the most important gas reserves are also in Middle East, and also between Central Asia, Caspian oil and gas. So Turkey is very well placed. Okay, but these are thousands of kilometers ambitious pipelines which need significant finance. So if you have a big consuming country in between, if it is Turkey, then it makes sense. It increases your feasibility. But since Turkey, unfortunately, in the recent years, before this government, made so many binding agreements with Russia, today Turkey is importing all the gas it needs. I mean, 100% of our consumption is being imported. And Russia has a stake of 65%. This is an irrational policy. Just imagine, the European Commission is trying to restrict or limit the amount of imports from a single country which is not an EU member with 30%, to be rational at least, to diversify the supply sources. We are already 65% dependent to Russian gas. So this again gives Russia an upper hand in this game, and it's very expensive. These are 25-year take-or-pay agreements. Unfortunately, the then governments exaggerated the gas demand figures of Turkey to justify an ambitious project called the Blue Stream. Now, the Blue Stream just is a subsea pipeline crossing the Black Sea and directly, without any intermediate country, directly transporting gas to Turkey. So it gives leverage to Russia, selling 65% of our gas. And when we had this crisis in this winter, Turkey was affected such. Today, in the first meeting that I attended, an expert working on Russian issues said, Turkey is not Ukraine, so Russia cannot cut the supplies for Turkey. This is a just, approach to the question. But yes, Turkey is not Ukraine, Turkey is not Moldova, Turkey is not Georgia. This is okay. But the problem is this. Turkey is being supplied by two pipelines. One is from west, crossing Ukraine, Moldova, Romania and Bulgaria. It is 14 billion cubic meters pipeline. And the Blue Stream in the meantime will be a 16 billion cubic meters pipeline. I mean, step by step, the amount is increasing. So the 14 billion cubic meters pipeline is crossing Ukraine, Romania and all those countries. And Ukraine is siphoning. Whenever it has a problem, it siphons the Russian gas coming to Turkey. So this is a significant problem as well. I mean, they are not, Russians are not directly cutting our supplies. And the rest of our imports are from Iran, this is 15%, and the rest, which is another, 15 is 80, so more or less 20% is in the form of liquefied natural gas is coming from Nigeria and Algeria. Most of it comes from Algeria in the form of LNG. But this winter also Iran cut the supply. So Turkey's energy security is also in great danger and threat. So more or less in gas, this is the story. Now Turkey is trying to negotiate with the Russians to have better terms in the agreements signed by the then Turkish governments. They are trying to reduce the prices. They are trying to have some offset clauses so that more or less it's a barter type of agreement. We don't pay in cash all the money. And also they are looking for some better clauses, advantages, incentives in the take or pay amounts. Okay, but this is a take or pay game. I mean, this is a zero-sum game. Without getting something, Russians will give you nothing. Now, what they are pushing is, like they did to Moldova, they did to Georgia, Armenia, and others, they are requesting exclusivity. They are requesting some, without bidding process, some rights, whether they can take it or not. We had seen this in the Blue Stream agreement. Can you imagine they have signed with Turkish government an agreement saying that within Turkey, without any bidding process, Gazprom will decide which consortium will construct the extension in Turkey, that is the Samsun-Ankara pipeline. So without any bidding process, we had that pipeline. So instead of, say, $200 or $250 million, it cost to $339 million, but it was given to Stroytransgaz and two companies close to the then government, I should say. Anyway, so now they are pushing for new exclusivities. What is that? We are requesting price reduction. We are requesting better conditions for take or pay agreements. So Russians are requesting other things to compromise. One, we still don't have an underground gas storage facility in Turkey. Just imagine, we have started in 1986 to consume gas. 20 years passed, we don't have an underground gas storage facility. So we are planning to have one or two. Hopefully, again, after so many delays, in June we will have one, 1.6 billion cubic meters capacity in Marmara, an old depleted gas reservoir. But also we are looking for, there is a salt lake in Turkey. We are going to use those salt caverns as a underground gas storage facility. Now Russians are they want exclusive rights in that to construct and operate that one. So this will give them, again, I'm using the same word, an upper hand. They will be in supply, they will be in storage, and also that what they want, they are requesting, looking for gas distribution facilities of Istanbul City, for example. This is another, I should say, in the integrated sector, another upper hand for them. What else? They are trying to extend and expand the Blue Stream line to further transport gas to Israel by a subsea pipeline. Okay, this will add to Turkey's geopolitic value. It will increase our strategic position maybe. But what we were chasing for was not north-south directed pipelines, but it was east-west directed pipelines anyway. And also what they want further, they are proposing now, since Europe is trying to diversify its resources and instead of getting more and more dependent to Russian gas, they are trying to diversify, and they have chosen Turkey as the fourth artery recently, and this is for our benefit if Turkey is going to integrate into European Union, if we are going to have a European Union in the 10-15 years time anyway, but this is for our benefit. I mean, Russia not being a dependable country, playing with the prices, so it increases your position.
But what Russia is now proposing is, okay, they say, let's give the European gas through Turkey. I mean, this is what not what the Europeans are requesting, but they can take this, I mean, from the hands of the Turkish authorities, hope not, when they're just negotiating these prices. So since these are 25 years long take-or-pay agreements, it's not easy, and we have international arbitration clauses, it's not easy to change this future easily. And also this gas coming from Russia, Iran, it had already been dedicated to certain built-operate transfer gas-fired plants for 25 years, and they are selling electricity accordingly with high prices because, first of all, the gas prices are very high. Anyway, Turkey is in a real problematic situation. So this does not help our position. Normally, naturally, our beneficial position when you look at the map, because we did not do our homework accordingly 10 years ago and in the recent years, I should say. So talking about Turkey being an energy hub, this is okay. And we are fighting for such projects, including Baku, Tbilisi, Ceyhan, Shah Deniz gas, which is called the project is called South Caspian Pipeline Project to carry the Azerbaijani gas to Turkey and then hopefully further to Europe. And already there is a Turkey-Greece natural gas connection pipeline for 3 billion cubic meters and hopefully then an additional 8 billion cubic meters to Italy. The construction for Turkey-Greece part already started. Now Russians are proposing this. Let's give gas to Greece. I mean, let's give Russian gas. I mean, this is not the planned one. We are looking for Azerbaijan gas. And finally, a final comment, and I would like to have your questions. Recently, we are talking again about this Turkmen gas. What stopped Turkmen gas on those days was this. Normally, Turkey was looking for diversification, and instead of Blue Stream, we already had a Western pipeline bringing us natural gas from Russia, as I told you, through Moldova and Ukraine, Romania, Bulgaria. This, instead of Blue Stream, we were promoting Turkmenistan gas, Azerbaijani gas, and maybe Iraq gas, not Iran gas. Anyway, but what stopped it was the preference of the then governments that they gave to the Blue Stream. They preferred Blue Stream. They gave incentives for tax. They gave $52 million advance payment. And this stopped Turkmen gas because the Turkish market was not suitable both for Blue Stream and Turkmen gas. I recall the CEO of the company that was Pipeline Solution Group, which was trying to bring the Turkmen gas to Turkey by a Trans-Caspian pipeline. Ed Smith, if I'm not mistaken, in the Senate, he gave a testimony and said the Turkish market is not that much big to absorb both the Blue Stream and Turkmen gas. If Blue Stream goes first, we will either forget Turkmen gas for several years or at all. We won't have a Turkmen gas. But it was not the only story. Turkmenbaşı requested a $250 million advance payment. This was a problem. There were problems between Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan for the Serdar oil field that Turkmens were calling it Serdar. Azerbaijanis were calling it Kepez. They still have problems. The status of the Caspian was also a problem. I have to mention those issues as well. But what stopped it was the priority that Turkey attached to Blue Stream. Those politicians gave priority to Blue Stream. What changed today? As you see, Russia has already grabbed Turkmen gas. Turkmenistan has significant reserves, but some is dedicated to more attractive markets, the Asian markets, a trans-Afghan pipeline. Mostly the Devletabad field is heading towards trans-Afghan pipeline to carry the Turkmen gas, if possible, to Pakistan, India, maybe further to China. Therefore, we don't have to mention about that gas. And also, 80 billion cubic meters of Turkmen gas has already been grabbed by Moscow. And what else? There is Shatluk field, maybe just giving its gas to Russia. But now Turkish politicians and bureaucrats are talking about Turkmen gas. We have to ask questions to Turkmen side. From which field and on which years you are going to give us this natural gas? I mean, is there enough oil? And what is your, I should say, time schedule for this? And who is going to invest? Without this, this will be just a lip service. So, honestly speaking, although I would be very happy to see Turkmen gas coming to Turkey and then further being transported to Europe, it does not seem to me realistic at this time. And Azerbaijan, hopefully, the planned schedule is September 2006. We are expecting the Azerbaijani gas in Turkey. But if I know the practice in Turkey, it may be delayed to early 2007. But again, it's the positive side of the story. But honestly speaking, talking about Turkey being a hub, normally we deserved more if we did our homework. But the processes are delayed. And I want to be optimistic, giving this much priority to Russian gas and continuing to support such initiatives, honestly speaking, I am not that much optimistic on the East-West philosophy as it deserves. So I can talk on many other issues, but whatever is more important to you, I would be very happy to hear your questions.
Actually, before we proceed to questions, can you put the map up again? Just take a couple of minutes to put some of the things in context that I made. The one you looked at with the maps?
Which one?
Any of them, but just so it shows the year.
This is better. No. This is bypass lines.
You were using another one. Just the... No, that's not bad. Okay.
Just a couple of minutes to put it into a more political context to aid the discussion. I mean, Nejat has covered all the angles as the expert on energy, with his knowledge of on the sector to a far greater extent than me. But what I want to do is to look at how the political context has changed in which all these pipelines are being laid. You know, back in the early 90s, when the Soviet Union had broken up, there was Azerbaijan, which had discovered oil offshore, what became the mega project led by BP and Amoco. Tengiz oil field up north, which Chevron led, the consortium, which went down to Novorossiysk on the CPC line that Nejdet talked about. And of course, Turkmenistan with its gas. So the discussion was a pipeline following the yellow line that would go from east to west. And this would buttress the independence of these countries from Russia, because it would end their dependence on Russian oil pipelines or a pipeline system of Transneft. It would keep them out of Iran's hands. And it would help Turkey and the Turkish-American relationship, because the U.S. was very much instrumental in this. Now, sure, there is the pipeline beginning in Baku, going down to Ceyhan, where oil is going to be fed at one end. It would come out at the other. But this is not part of an integrated energy policy in Turkey. There's no refinery there. It would get loaded onto tankers, and it would go to where they're going to go. Does that make Turkey a key energy hub? Does that make Ceyhan a rival to Rotterdam, which when the Turks get carried away, they talk extensively about? No, not really. And secondly, look at the arrow. Nejdet has talked about the 16 BCM, billion cubic meters, coming from the Blue Stream pipeline. these 14 BCM coming from the other side. 30 BCM altogether, which is greater than the consumption last year. And Russians are talking about sending gas to Turkey, as he related, and then from Turkey on to Europe. That wasn't the idea. The idea of the East-West Corridor was that there would be non-Russian sources that would be taken to markets through Turkey. Now, that does not make Turkey an energy hub. Now, add to this the speculation that Necdet did not touch on, because I think he forgot, to build a pipeline, oil pipeline, from Samsun to Ceyhan,
the bypass,
which would, again, supposedly enhance the role of Turkey as an energy hub. Now, why are we even talking about this? Because, you know, the dirty little secret is that Baku Tbilisi Ceyhan did not solve the problem of the Bosphorus and the Straits, which is, again, one of the arguments that was being made, because the argument was made that if it all went into the Black Sea, then it would have to go through the Straits, and this was unacceptable to Turkey. We're discussing a bypass through Thrace. I think you had a map somewhere. I don't know if you can put it up, because there's still so much oil coming into the Black Sea. That issue is still out there. So, you know, the questions I'm going to throw out, because I even spoke longer than I wanted to, is, you know, from my point of view, I think Turkey's trying to play a big role in this process, but it isn't playing the role that it was supposed to play. Then, and frankly, the East-West Corridor is now being challenged by possibly an even stronger North-South link. Now, what does that all mean? Well, a lot of expertise in this room, so frankly, you know, anybody who wants to join the discussion rather than just address questions to Necdet, you're welcome to join the discussion. Anybody? Please.
I'd like to ask the cost of...
Microphone. You need a microphone.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. I'll share. Yeah. I'd like to ask you the cost of being an energy hub from the security point of view, because that requires constant flow of energy anyway. Should I introduce myself?
No.
Yeah, that's my question. The cost, from the security point of view.
First of all, when people discuss and promote such issues, I mean, Turkey being an energy hub, pipelines crossing your territory, most of the time you're talking positively and trying to promote the issue. You hope that it will bring stability to the region. And honestly speaking, if we are talking about, first of all, some transit revenues, they are modest. Just a case in point is BTC pipeline. For the first 6 years, what is guaranteed, if you ask me? Not more than $40 million for 1 year, because the guaranteed volumes are 250,000 barrels a day at most. When you convert it to what Botash is going to get or what the Treasury is going to get, for the first 6 years, it's not more than 40 million. Just to just force your imagination, I mean, you are not going to have billions of dollars because the public does not know these numbers exactly. And maybe in the peak, when peak volumes are transported, it could be as high as $300 million a year. The peak volumes are 1 million barrels a day, or roughly 50 million tons a year. Now, of course, within this, BOTAŞ operation expenses are also included, so these are not net numbers. So if we are talking about earning money from these pipelines, yes, you will earn money, but these are the volumes. Would it bring stability for Georgia? Yes, if you compare it with their budget. For Azerbaijan, yes, this is a first outlet, not crossing Russian territory, so they have the access to Western markets with reliable prices they would receive. But also, pipelines would bring, on the contrary, risks. A case in point is Kerkük-Yumurtalık pipeline. Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan at its peak point will carry, as I told you, 50 million tons per year. The design capacity of Kerkük-Yumurtalık is 71 million tons per annum. But during Saddam times, it was more or less half capacity working. Now it's not working at all. So despite from stopping your transit revenues, also there are so many hundreds of attacks towards that line. So north-south, east-west pipelines theoretically will increase your geopolitical status, it will add to your strategic values maybe, but also it will bring additional risks. Nowadays everybody is discussing the security of the Black Sea, for example. This is a very dangerous issue. It's hard to touch because the U.S. is getting more and more nervous about the issue. Just for the tanker transportation, oil transportation, also for the security of BTC, whatever you may say, for the security of the energy resources and their transportation, they try to go into that region, but Russia does not like it. So we have real problems in Iraq. We are expecting problems in Iran, and Turkey is also nervous about the situation, and we are losing so much because of terror and many, many issues. Nobody is happy with the situation in north part of Iraq, and now there is Black Sea. So pros and cons are on the table, but there are real risks, and also there may be some advantages, but we have to know the limits. I mean, $40 million, $300 million, and of course it's not only Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan. If we have a Samsun-Ceyhan oil pipeline, it will also bring something. The other pipelines would bring you something, but they are not assets that would change Turkey's economy much, at least.
You don't have to exaggerate.
Just to follow up on the issue of the revenues. Now, you mentioned that, you know, Turkey would get $40 million a year, roughly, for the first six years. But isn't there also the issue of the cost overruns that Turkey made a commitment on, which undermines even that early revenue that I think you might want to address?
Okay, this is another issue. What Bülent is mentioning is this. According to the agreements that we signed, there are several agreements between countries for Baku, Tbilisi, Ceyhan, Azerbaijan and Georgia. Georgia and Turkey signed agreements between countries. We have also a turnkey price agreement. Turkey said and guaranteed that the Turkish section of the Baku, Tbilisi, Ceyhan would not exceed $1.3 billion. If it exceeds up to $1.7 billion, Turkey will carry the cost overruns, from our treasury. So what happened, if you may ask? I don't have the latest figures, but it was last year. It was already $1.42 billion, and I think it's not less than $1.7 billion at the moment. This means that Turkey, we are going to sit to the table and negotiate these issues with BP, the operator of the BTC pipeline. They will bring their concerns, and we will try to define our position. But as you see, we are not good at negotiations, so maybe Turkey will have a problem on that sense. Another cost overrun, you may say, it's not cost overrun, but for the delay also in the agreements, we have certain articles. For every day of delay, Turkey has promised to pay $500,000. Anyway, it was limited with 2 months, so it could not be more than that total sum. But after we have the first loading from Ceyhan, parties will sit and then discuss the issue. If we can negotiate, maybe we won't pay, but there is a big risk on that issue as well. Thank you for that.
Yeah, well, in all that hype in Turkey, this is not the kind of thing that that is discussed. Most of the time, it's the benefits rather than the costs which are taken into account.
Can I add on that?
There's a hand up there, but go ahead. If this is related to this, go ahead.
My name is Ahmet Ren. I represent Alarko Construction Group here. And with it, the lot 3 on the Baku-Ceyhan pipeline. And I want to comment on the cost overruns, I mean, which we have faced. And there are some companies even that came at the edge of bankruptcy. And due to our strong financial status, we were able to finance about $86 million out of our own pocket, the project. And we did our claims to BP, and we only received about $37 million. So there's the 50 there. Exactly, exactly. And this is mainly due to the mismanagement of Potash. There has been huge delays, and which we couldn't claim properly. And so that's, I mean, there are some cases which is even more worse than ours, especially in the compressor stations, and so the situation is more disastrous. But nevertheless, we have finished, we have run the tests, and now we have submitted the line for operation, so we are just keeping a minimal staff there to, you know, to assist the BP people there. So basically, this is just a small portion of the cost overruns. Yes.
Well, thank you for the intervention. I think this is the kind of thing that ought to be discussed, and yeah. I'm happy you brought it in, because in fact, you know, we've lost sight of the fact that a pipeline is supposed to be a commercial enterprise, bringing energy resources to markets in a commercial manner. Instead, with all the hype and the discussion of the Turkey's emergence as a hub, I mean, we lost sight of this. Here we're talking about a company that actually lost, if I did not misunderstand you, over $50 million. And our companies are out to make money. And instead, this became almost a national project in which Alarko got involved for all sorts of reasons, prestige included, presumably, and they lost money. I mean, this does not make sense, Necdet. And you want to pick it up?
Well, I mean, we discussed a lot this issue, so the same will happen for the total line. There was bankruptcy, and they introduced new companies, and as far as I know, something around 40 new items were introduced by the newcomer company. I don't want to mention the names, and that increased the price very much, and this is mismanagement, honestly speaking. Now, general manager is being cased for this, but all these issues are okay. Case them. I don't want to change the subject, but for the being yes, there's a case against them. Anyway, just to have a better understanding, maybe it could be a good example for the Blue Stream, the Samsung Ankara. Line, as I told you, was constructed without a bidding process. Now the issue is in front of the High Court. To the then ministers, Cumhur Ersumer and Zeki Çakan are in front of the High Court, and I am one of the witnesses over there. Anyway, this advance payment issue was also being trialed, and five, if I am not mistaken, top managers were just sentenced. What did they pay? Something around 10 million Turkish liras, old Turkish liras or something like that, because they paid $52 million. Just imagine. So whether in the final run such bureaucrats or maybe politicians are punished, but it does not change the fate of the country for 25 years. Again, it's not directly related with this issue maybe, but just because of two items. One, these exaggerated take-or-pay, exaggerated demand figures resulted in these take-or-pay agreements. Although we criticized the issue, the then bureaucrats and the energy ministry on those days, for the year 2010, I am addressing to 1997, 1998, late 1990s, those BOTAŞ managers and energy ministry officials,
said the demand, gas demand figures would be as high as 55 billion cubic meters for Turkey. For the year 2010, 55 billion cubic meters. Now, if you go to the BOTAŞ website today, it is around 40 billion cubic meters. But unfortunately, due to this 55 billion cubic meters exaggerated demand figure, they have signed, so we have signed, I mean Turkey, so many take or pay agreements. Now we are in the danger of paying this amount without using the gas. So according to these miscalculations or exaggerated figures, Turkey has a risk to pay if we cannot solve it through negotiations. By the year 2014, a cumulative amount of $14 billion. This is a stranded risk cost on the treasury. And due to high electricity sales to the state by the gas-fired plants, BOTs or BOs, whatever it is $19 billion. So altogether by the year 2019, $33 billion only by these so-called mistakes, the treasury is under risk. So Turkey has so many problems. Without solving these, you cannot solve the problems of EU or become a hub, honestly speaking.
Thank you for waiting patiently.
You mentioned the fact that there is an idea of extending the Blue Stream line to Israel. How do you see the implications of this extension on Turkey's role and the Russian role in the Middle Eastern game?
Well, as I tried to elaborate on a recent question, of course, from the very beginning, when we were trying to promote the BTC pipeline, it's not that much different. We had the support of, for example, Israeli lobbying the states more than our official lobby companies. Bülent knows it very well. We had the support from Israel because this was very much practical. It is a pragmatic approach. Instead of trying to look for those Arab countries, a partner, not Arab country, a secular country, Turkey, could supply Israel, or could supply oil to Israel. So from Israel's point of view, BTC was a pipeline to be defended, supported. Similarly, having gas again through Turkey, this makes sense. Initially, unfortunately it's in Turkish now, but there is a book written by Fırat Gazel, a very capable press member. There is a book written called Blue Stream, Mavi Akım, and there it gives all the details, how the project was first originated. It was called Lazar Project. The initial project was to transport Russian gas to Israel. Then it changed its way, it became Blue Stream, and now it's being revitalized. So there is a big Israeli backing behind this project. But would confronting Arab countries be happy? Or say, I don't want to exaggerate the issue, but would terrorist or radical movements be happy about such lines? So when I was trying to address the pros and cons of such projects, it will add to Turkey's geopolitical strength, its strategical position, but also it will bring risks to us. With the existing situation in the Middle East, it's really hard to imagine that Palestinians and many other Arab countries would be happy with such pipeline. But normally it will strengthen Russian, Turkish and Israeli triangle. There is no doubt about it.
This problem of Russian hegemony is very much on people's mind in Washington as well. And I know President Bush, I think, plans a trip to Kazakhstan where he might raise the issue. I was wondering, Nejdet, if you or perhaps you, Glenn, could bring us up to date on what the U.S. has been doing to, you know, to promote alternative routes, and if there is any cooperation between Turkey and Washington in that manner.
I think the effort is still born. Because for years and years, we've been talking about the idea of bringing Kazakh oil to join Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan. But the most of the oil, in fact, if you go back to Nejdet for 1 second, most of the Kazakh oil that's going to markets is going through the CPC to Novorossiysk and ending up in the Black Sea. I mean, the volume is... What is the current volume of the CPC line from Kazakh oil?
It's 26 million tons per annum in the peak capacity.
Right. All that amount, which dwarfs what is going to come from the Azeri fields in the initial stage, certainly, through BTC, is ending up through a Russian system in the Black Sea that the U.S. has not done anything about. And in fact, the U.S. has been trying to balance its relationship with the Russians, which is understandable, with its commitment to the East-West Corridor. And frankly, the process has not worked. You have a situation in which the Russians are unhappy about being pushed on all sorts of issues, as we know, including democracy, including leaning on their neighbors. And at the same time, the U.S. wants to encourage Russia to produce more oil, to get become more of an energy player as an alternative to the Middle East. And we have a situation in which everybody is confused about exactly what it is that the U.S. is currently pushing. I certainly am confused. So, you know, we have the reality on the ground that most of the oil that leaves Kazakhstan for the foreseeable future, along with the gas in Kazakhstan, is going to leave via Russia. Now, no amount of visits by high U.S. officials, including the president, is going to change this. Now, is this bad? Well, it's bad if you believe in an East-West corridor that avoids Russia. Now, is it bad in other respects? I think Frank is beyond the scope of this meeting. You want to pick it up?
Okay. Before just touching the U.S. policy, it would be, I mean, Bülent knows it better than I do, but if you are asking specifically the alternatives to Russian gas, let's be more specific. Start with Turkmenistan. We discussed it. I mean, I am really hesitating about the volumes available, not discussing the reserves. So Turkmen gas has many, many problems. Hope it could be solved. So EU, US and Turkish cooperation is needed because Europe deadly needs diversification. They need vast amounts of gas imports, as I told you. Today it is something around 200 billion, roughly, cubic meters that they are importing. By the year 2030, it is 630 billion cubic meters. Normally, they are importing from Norway, Algeria, and Russia. Now, they are trying to diversify it. So, it makes sense, but there are many, many obstacles. If we do not mention them, then it will be just a rhetoric. So, Turkmen gas is an alternative, but it has its problems, number one. Number two, it is Azerbaijani gas. Hopefully, 6.6 billion cubic meters at the peak volumes and starting with 2 billion cubic meters late 2006 and pragmatically, hopefully, early 2007, we will have Azerbaijani gas. This is something. Also, what Turkey has signed an agreement, as you know, what is next is Egyptian gas, 4 billion cubic meters and maybe some extra volumes to be carried to, transported to Europe. This is another opening, nothing to do with the U.S. policies. I mean, this is a Turkish approach. It was being discussed since years. Now, after the gas crisis, I think they are trying to do something. What else is Iranian gas? We already have. Last year, we purchased 4.3 billion cubic meters from Iran, but we have problems. Frequently, we are having arbitration. We are in front of the courts because they cannot supply it. There are many, many interruptions for technical and other reasons. And what else is Iraq? If the U.S. wants to help, Iraq is a very concrete example. For the last 10 years, Turkish Petroleum is trying to just have a reliable, just a working agreement, I should say, on Mansouriye gas fields.
but we are not successful because we are trying to make the deal with the current government, and you know the situation in Iraq at the moment. But this project is 10 billion cubic meters project, and it makes sense. If the U.S. wants to do something, they should promote Turkey. But I have heard that there were some 5 fields around Mansouria, gas fields. I have heard, I did not confirm it from BOTAŞ people, that at least these 5 fields that Turkish Petroleum was interested, 2 were given to some American companies, if I am not mistaken. So instead of helping, there is a problem over there. Anyway, but and also Black Sea. There are recent exploration efforts in the Black Sea. Together with BP, Turkish Petroleum is trying to find some resources over there. But the initial, the first well, they did not announce it yet, but I did not hear any positive results. This does not mean that the results are negative, but until today I didn't receive positive results, but there is a significant potential over there. So maybe this could be helpful instead of the U.S. policy, but Iraq is very much important. If the U.S. wants to do something, they should start with Iraq.
But John, can I introduce one more question? Provoke or not, provocation or not. Here's an intellectual and a practical problem to follow on from Yasemin's question. Given the extent of Turkish dependence on Russia for gas, the alternatives that Necdet has outlined, getting Azeri gas, which is going to come soon, getting possibly gas from Iraq, Egyptian gas. He's talked about also about Iran, but that creates all sorts of problems that I'm not going to get into. But the idea is that you push them through the 3 BCM capacity line into Greece and beyond. Now, for the Russians, the European market, Western European market, is a very lucrative market. So the idea here is for the Russians to say, okay, the Turks are currently committed to buy more gas from us than they're currently consuming this year, and we are supposed to watch them get this alternative gas and push it to compete with our gas in the most lucrative market that we have. Frankly, this is going to create lots of problems. Now, for the U.S. government as well as for everybody else, do you want non-Russian gas to compete with Russian gas going through Turkey at a time when Turkey has this complicated relationship with the Russians and to deal with all the issues that that's going to raise? Are we at that point? No. Has the U.S. government and Turkey tackled it together to deal with it and brought the Russians in so that everybody's comfortable with the alternatives that are going to be created? Have the other actors, including Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, and the others whose gas may be pushed through, being brought into this? No. The issues are out there, and frankly, nobody's dealing with them in a practical manner. Thank you for waiting, John.
There's another element here that has not really been focused on, and that is the fact that at the end of the day, all of these arrangements are private commercial arrangements. The U.S. has always been hamstrung, in my mind, in terms of being able to really follow through on any policy, because at the end of the day, they don't control and have never attempted to seriously try and work with, or I won't say work with, be persuasive in terms of providing guarantees or anything like that, to induce the private sector to move in any direction other than what the private sector is wanting to move in. We were involved in terms of Baku Jehan in the early 90s, at the very inception of the project, when there was an opportunity, if the U.S. government had wanted to provide Exim guarantees or the like, where actually you could have accelerated the process. They've never done it. They won't do it. So whatever the U.S. wants to say is basically verbiage, because at the end of the day, the companies are going to move at their own pace. But it seems to me that, I mean, there's an irony here in my mind in that in a situation as complicated as this, basically it requires government decision-making on the part of the Turkish government when the government itself has proven itself to be very incompetent in terms of actually negotiating any of these deals. Where does the current government stand in terms of trying to negotiate its way forward, whether it's being able to actually make progress in terms of addressing these issues? As you know, I mean, we have a power plant, one of the early power plants, and our difficulties with the government go right to the fact that, one, it was a because it was in the early days, it was a deal that the Turkish government now considers to be too one-sided in favor of ourselves. But also, additionally, we're totally hamstrung because of the price of gas. Because the price of gas flows through, but it provides about two-thirds to even three-quarters of the overall price of electricity. So this is an extraordinary problem, and I don't know whether anybody really has got a handle on in terms of how you go forward with this. Would you comment in terms of where sort of the Erdogan government is?
you know those issues much better than I do because you are facing the problems anyway. But you are right in saying that the almost two-thirds of the price of the electricity is coming from the natural gas. What they did, starting with the original position of these agreements, they wanted private sector involvement in the energy sector. And when these companies came, partly Turkish and partly foreign companies, instead of using Turkey's hydraulic potential, three-fourths waiting to be exploited at the moment, 190 billion kilowatt hours technically, economically utilizable capacity is waiting over there, and only one-fourth is being used. Turkey has a significant lignite capacity. Okay, they didn't care, and most of the companies rushed to natural gas because the construction period was relatively shorter, and initial investment was lower compared to coal and mainly to hydraulic plants. So they rushed for commercial credits, which were not favorable compared to state credits taken by the state. Anyway, so the cash flow diagrams and when they were expecting returns, the initial periods were really significant numbers, as you know. I mean, when you compare it with a hydraulic plant or, say, with a lignite plant of the state, it's not more than 3.5 cents per kilowatt hours. On the contrary, these built-up rate transfer type plants are receiving 10-11 cents per kilowatt hour. So it's not easy to explain the situation to the public. I mean, there is a big debate, and also not the public only, in the households, and also industry cannot compete with those prices, and everybody is angry with the government. But instead of professionally trying to solve, I mean, if I were there, I don't know what to do. Maybe if we were together, on one side you have the industry over there and the public pressure on your shoulders, and it's not easy to solve the situation. You can buy the plants, but the initial investment amounts were high. I mean, so honestly speaking, we were in a live TV show with the minister, and when this question, more or less a similar question, was asked, his response was such. He said he did not generalize the issue, but gave an example of Bursa. He said these private companies just increase the investment amounts, and compared to state-done plants, the initial investment was 50% higher with the same specifications, and also they were requesting 5.5% on dollar basis escalation, for example. I mean, this is how they approach. So they want unconditionally those companies to reduce their prices, but those companies have taken those credits accordingly. So there is a debate, as you know. Now, one of the recent solutions that they are proposing, they are trying to change the build-up rate transfer type of plants to build-up rate ones. Whether this would be suitable or not, they are expecting new cash flow proposals. But it's not easy. I mean, since something is done,
one crazy man is throwing a stone, there's an expression in Turkey again, and 40 wise men cannot take that out. So it's not easy, but incompetence is a general problem in almost every sector nowadays. This is why I am also very much hesitant when such people negotiate. I don't want to generalize, but incompetence is the most important problem nowadays.
I think, frankly, it's more than incompetence. What we, and you and I have discussed this many times, Necdet, is when you don't have an integrated energy policy, when you know exactly how much energy you will need, when you will need it, how you will bring it in, and how you would use it inside, and on top of that, you try and superimpose at the macro level, Turkey playing a role internationally in bringing energy for itself, and then to pass it on to others, in conjunction with the neighboring countries, with the giant to the north, Russia, as well as the United States, which is very much interesting, is what you have is this hodgepodge in which everything is disjointed. And you have all these claims, which when you examine them, frankly, don't amount to very much because of the confusing way in which you make policy on an ad hoc basis. Anyway, we're going to wrap up in a few minutes. Is there anybody else who's interested in it? Very quickly. Question there, Seda, and Richard. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wondered if you might comment briefly on some of the internal Turkish dynamics that have steered the government towards the Samsun-Ceyhan bypass as opposed to the Thrace bypass. Certainly there are some reasons, you know, that are pretty evident. The hub, the goal of being the energy hub and using Ceyhan and some of the property issues on the Thrace route. But I wonder if you might just tell us a little bit about that.
Why the government preferred Samsun-Ceyhan and not, for example, a Trans-Thrace type of pipeline? Is it the question? There may be several concepts. If you or I were the ones to decide, you would look at the economics. You would look at the technical capacities. You would look at throughput volumes. You would look at environmental conditions, strategical maybe, and some other factors. You want me to comment on such claims as certain companies being promoting this Samsun-Ceyhan pipeline, which are close to the government. Yes, there are such claims. And whether they have, ground support, it's another question. But there are certain companies, I don't want to, this is not my style, give names of such companies, but everybody openly knows such. But at least not in the favor of being in the favor of the government, but I know that the army headquarters also did not like the Trans-Thrace solution, Kuyukyo İbrik Baba. And also the Minister of Environment, it was against. Municipalities were against for environmental reasons. And the Foreign Ministry, I don't know the exact reasons behind it, they were also against. And they were trying to promote Samsun-Ceyhan pipeline. In fact, the Samsun-Ceyhan pipeline was a BOTAŞ project initially, even before Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan or more or less in parallel they were. And also Kuyukyo İbrik Baba was another one, because our main concern was the Straits. Nowadays 150 million tons of oil is, this is being said, transporting oil tanker trafficking is 150 million tons per annum through the Straits, and the Straits cannot afford this much. But if you ask it to certain companies, they say it can go up to 200 million tons. For example, Terry Adams was promoting that when he was working for BP. But it's not the case. It's very dangerous. So for that purpose, Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan will have a 50 million tons capacity, but we still have 50 million more by the year 2010. So we will again have 150. So we need a bypass. But as far as I see, despite this certain company promotion, there are other also issues. But could it be done? As far as I know, within the government, there are also reactions to such preferences. Therefore, at the moment, as far as I know, we don't have a Samsun-Ceyhan pipeline, and also there is no throughput guarantee at the moment for this, because Russians do not prefer such a solution. But they are negotiating on this. There will be a compromise. If Turkey gives something, maybe they will send their throughput. I mean, it depends. So, but in internal politics, there are certain ministers, or specifically one, as far as I know, reacting to this type of solution because of certain company names are given, and he is not happy with those rumors anyway.
I've actually talked to that particular minister that I won't name, Necdet, and frankly, his opposition is not going to be replaced or removed in a hurry. In fact, very quickly, Necdet's map up there shows that there are two alternatives in Thrace, one of them through Turkey and one of them not through Turkey, through Bulgaria and Greece. Every time that this has been raised at the highest level between Tayyip Erdogan and Vladimir Putin, the Russians have said the choice is not between a Thracian line or Samsun-Ceyhan. They don't want Samsun-Ceyhan. It's between the two Thracian lines. If you want, let us do it through Turkey. We will be happy to go for the Bulgarian, Greek, Bulgarian pipeline. So, will the Russians change their position? I don't think so, because I think their priority is for a much shorter route, and this is not the time to go into it, but I don't think that Samsun-Ceyhan is going to happen in a hurry. But maybe we could discuss this some other time. Sada, and then Roshan, and we'll wrap it up.
Actually, my question was asked, so my question was regarding the Samsun-Ceyhan pipeline, but thank you for the presentation. It was, you gave us a kind of gloomy picture regarding, you know, Turkey, whether it should be, or it can be energy hub or not. But let's say, in the long run, even though there are not many things that Turkey can change because pretty much tied itself to those agreements, you think that in the short run there are some things that can be saved or the picture can be changed a little bit? I mean, is it really that hopeless?
I mean, in the energy sector, there are so many things that can be done. I mean, not to be a hub solely. I mean, the issue, this is one of the issues, whether Turkey is going to be a hub or not, but in our energy sector, yes, there are things that we can do. I mean, I don't want to change the subject, but for example, the installed capacity, take Turkey's, I don't want to be that much technical, but around 36,800 megawatts installed capacity, you should at least produce 200 billion kilowatt hours a year. We are producing 160, so there is a problem in using your installed capacity. So this could be solved. There are rehabilitation problems, there are mismanagement problems. So this could be solved, for example. Second, we are losing, before the produced electricity reaches the consumer, 20%. So altogether you are losing 40%. So this is a significant amount. So instead of talking about, for example, nuclear energy or other subjects, you have solutions here, and with 20% being lost before reaching to the consumer, it is a bucket with a hole. Whether you put in from nuclear, whether you put in from hydrogen, say you have hydrogen energy, you are going to lose. So first you have to solve this. There are many issues. You have your own resources like hydraulic, as I told you, and coal. So these issues may help you to just take a breath, and when you face with such problems, you may solve. Also, theoretically, there are issues that you may solve. What I mean, for example, Turkey can cancel at least the Western pipeline agreement, for example. This is an argument, I mean. Why? Just since the minister has openly declared this, I can also mention, for the Western pipeline, the then government signed certain agreements. Just imagine, there are two agreements.
Can you explain
Western pipeline is the one, as I mentioned, maybe, so I did not want to repeat myself, transporting the Russian gas through Ukraine, Moldova, Romania and Bulgaria, 14 billion cubic meters capacity, and at least 8 billion cubic meters capacity of that is a subject of a certain agreement through a company called Trusgas. Now they are trying to transfer those agreements to private sector anyway. But when those agreements were signed, there are two agreements, just imagine, having the same date, having the same number, but the formulas are different. This means corruption directly. So when you go to the arbitration, international arbitration, this is enough evidence for canceling such agreement. Huh? But when you cancel it, like pressing a button, how would you solve your energy problem? Natural gas is not only for producing electricity. Most of it is being used in Turkey for producing electricity. But at least theoretically, we can cancel this. And also, we can cancel the Iranian gas agreement. I'm just giving these examples. There are things to be done, but how would you replace it the next day? It's another issue. Again, as far as the Iranian agreement is concerned, if there is interruption for this reason or that, more than 70 days in a year, you can cancel it. Last year it was 90 days, for example. So Turkey has that right, but using this issue, they are negotiating on the prices. Maybe I would do the same, but anyhow, there are things to be done. So it's not a direct answer to your question, but there could be a better management, I should say.
Maybe very personal and ridiculous question, but you mentioned so many risks and you criticize the politics and you raise so many risks, not only economic one but also strategic one. But in Turkey, in the public opinion, I am not witnessing is a kind of a popular debate on this, especially about this risk. And in Turkey in general, ordinary people or the mass media in general, at large, they are presenting this issue like Turkey's future and Turkey's victory and so on. That's really only as a positive aspect of this, the hub of energy, global energy. Why this? Because of lack of interest or... is there some kind of public relation and lobbying campaign of this energy company, especially Russia, or what's happening there? We know only maybe sometimes some corruption issue, but in Turkey we are not discussing these risks. And we,
the financial aspects of it.
Financial and strategical aspects we are not really discussing, and I've never really heard about this. This kind of risk is for Turkey.
There may be many reasons behind. Normally, nobody likes to hear bad news in Turkey and everywhere. Maybe Bülent and myself, we were that much involved in Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan promoting that pipeline. But when a time came and we had seen that BP was reluctant. They were not supporting the Baku-Supsa early oil line, or they were reluctant in... They did not care about Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan as a main export pipeline. They were promoting Iranian solutions, and they were promoting pipelines passing through Russia. I have all those documents with me. I mean, these are concrete examples. But when we were promoting that pipeline and debating with such companies, but a time came when we were critical about the implementation of the project. Suddenly the weather changed and some officials started to just blame us here in Turkey, myself, and here in the state, Bülent, that we are trying to stop, we are against Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan. I mean, people always try to pump good news to the public. And who are just stating their views in the media? Just look. Normally, either big companies are effective, and which big companies would promote such, it's another issue. But and also, say, governmental officials. I mean, most of the time, when you open the newspapers, either a minister says something, another one says another thing. So they are talking too much. I am one of the most lucky, I should say, if you so-called experts, that have enough chance to find at least place in the TVs and otherwise, the other media. But I think it's not enough. I do not want to always give pessimistic views, but when you talk about such problems, nobody's happy with those. And they say, for this reason or that, they are taking it personal. When we were critical about this issue and told this to, for example, State Department people about Baku Tbilisi Ceyhan, they said, okay, these are personal issues. They don't like Ahmet, they don't like Mehmet, so they are trying to personalize. You are easily singled out when you talk in this sense. Normally, you should promote everything. Everything is fine. It's very interesting. I again recall today we talked it with the then ambassador Mark Paris this morning. It was his wording. He was, for example, criticizing the Blue Stream. It was a project on those days, not a concrete pipeline as it is today. And he said, it is not a Blue Stream, it is Blue Dream. I mean, he was playing with those words. And it's very interesting. When this government came into power, this minister, this is too much maybe personal, but called me and asked me what we can do together to stop this irrational project. Is there things that we can do? Are there things we can do? And from then on, in different issues, we tried to just change our ideas. But just remember, after the first gas we received from Blue Stream, 3 years passed, and suddenly you saw the Prime Minister celebrating the Blue Stream project. I mean, this government, this party was totally against it.
Putin and Berlusconi.
Putin and Berlusconi. And then they asked me that day, TRT and many other, I should say, agencies and everyone, look, the Prime Minister is just celebrating. There's a ceremony. I said, I mean, there are different type of ceremonies. I mean, funeral is also a ceremony. But it was really very, very interesting because I know that the minister is not still very happy. Because this means that there are certain centers which are promoting such projects, whether it is for the benefit of the country or not, unfortunately, and they have much influence in the media, so their voices heard. Just imagine, I mean, Putin, I can understand, this is success. I can understand Berlusconi, this is his success as well, because the Blue Stream, I mean, Saipem was in that game. But what we are celebrating, it's hard to understand. When you are critical, they don't like you, I mean. Anyway, it's not an answer maybe, but thank you very much, Bülent, and to all you for your patience.
Okay, yep, thank you, Necdet, and thank you all for coming. Very important subject, and I hope we can continue it another day.